So here we are, Mr. Parry. Mm. We are back in the studios with Audio Boom, our friends.
We are.
On the record goes from strength to strength. We're marching away towards about 2.5 million listens now.
Yes.
Be 3 million soon. Been a fantastic couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of news to talk about.
We have.
What would you like to start with?
Well, listen, I want to tell you about something which I've come across in my historical journals, okay?
Right. Go on.
Now, you may find this perhaps not relative to our life in our world.
Yeah.
But if you ever find yourself in a position where you're about to be executed,
yeah,
be nice to your executioner.
Well, luckily, I've never quite found myself in that spot.
No, but
some of our colleagues have been in some pretty tight spots in various jobs that they've been on.
I know. I remember once being in the Washington, D.C. Press Club with a lad. Do you know, I can't remember his name. He's a big, tall fellow. He's very nice indeed. And he worked for the paper that was short-lived, the Sunday something or other.
The Sunday, yeah, I know. Is that the one that was started in the Northwest?
Yes, that's right.
Which was like the workers' cooperative one.
No, it wasn't that one, actually. It was another one called the Sunday Correspondent.
I remember that.
Sunday Correspondent,
yeah, that
right?
was a sort of quality, wasn't it?
It was quality paper, that's right. Sunday Correspondent. And he was in the Washington
Press Club. I think I might have sold him a couple of stories.
Yeah, I think you might have done, yeah, the Sunday Correspondent. And it was run by all these highfalutin guys who'd come out of Cambridge University and decided we need a, you know, middle ground, you know, leaning to the left newspaper. There were plenty of those around. The Observers around, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And decided they and the Independent and all that, want to do that. So I remember talking to him, and he was off to... In those days, there was a war going on in Honduras.
Yes.
And what was the other accompanying...
Was that not the kind of Sandinistas' time?
You know, it was Sandinista time.
Oliver North and all that.
Colonel North and all that kind of stuff. Honduras.
I am not a potted plant. Do you remember his lawyer?
Yeah,
who sat in the hearing. And they started talking directly to Oliver North.
That's right.
And the lawyer, who was quite a sort of chippy little guy,
yeah,
said, I'm not a potted plant, Senator.
Yeah, yeah,
please
right.
address me
if
you wish to talk to my client.
That's right, absolutely. But El Salvador and Honduras.
Yes.
So this guy, David, I think his first name was, David, he was going down there, and I said, fine. 3 days later, sadly he got shot on the border.
What, killed?
He was trying to go from Honduras to El Salvador.
Right.
He got out of the, you know, the 4x4 they were in and approached the border guards to explain he had a visa or something like that, and he got shot dead.
Yeah. A lot of these places, life is very, very cheap.
Cheap.
I don't know if you've seen the movie Salvador, but it's very, very, I would say, highly recommended. It's one of Oliver Stone's first movies.
Okay.
And it's got James Woods in it. And it's a fantastic film about war correspondence, but it's all about that period when Reagan was in charge and they were sending all this money down to kill off the communists and the Sandinistas and all that.
That's right.
Amazing film. And people... They thought nothing of blowing you away.
No.
They also quite liked the old South American practice of cutting off your ghoulies and sticking them in your mouth.
That's not very
and
nice.
And leaving you by the side of the road.
Exactly.
Not very pleasant way
I
to
mean,
go.
I mean, you know, in the film Scarface, they put your handcuffs around the shower rail and then they cut your legs off with a chainsaw.
With a chainsaw in the bath,
nice, actually.
You didn't want to make too much of a mess in the bathroom.
No, exactly. Well, they did in the bathroom because, of course, you can wipe blood up easier off tiles, can't you?
Well, I think
carpet
so.
And all that kind of stuff. And, of course, the first one that Reagan got involved in shortly after he became the president was Grenada.
Yes, right.
Which didn't keep Mrs. Thatcher very happy because Grenada was a British protectorate, you know?
Mind you, it wasn't much of a place to invade because it wasn't really a defence force.
There was nothing there.
No.
There was nothing there.
Weren't they going to, didn't they go and save a load of students or something who were, like, sitting in a canteen?
Yeah, something like that, And all you saw were pictures of all these American troops driving around in these jeeps with a stand-up gun on the back, you know, blowing away parrots and trees and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But that's where, of course, our old friend Henry Miller achieved his greatest ever...
Harry Miller,
reporting feat.
Yes.
Because he didn't file a word for 8 days he was there because he was absolutely pissed.
Paralytic.
He was paralytic for 8 days in the Holiday Inn in Barbados, because that's as close as you get to Grenada.
Right.
But fortunately, because we're a family in Fleet Street and we were out there in America then, somebody different filed... copy for him every day.
I think it was Phil Finn, actually.
Phil did. George Gordon did from the Mail. George filed one day. And the problem was that Harry, when he surfaced the next day and got a call back from the news desk saying, great piece last night, Harry. He didn't know what it was because he hadn't filed it himself.
No.
Somebody else had filed it. But that's what it's all about. Anyway, the reason...
Yeah, what's this executioner stuff about?
Well, the reason I'm telling you this is because... What could happen, you see, you could, you know, suppose we go back on the road, we decide we want to go back on the road, and we go to some dreadful republic that's been taken over by some Satanist, you know, you went and did the Bosnia War, didn't you,
and
all that kind of stuff. There were very, very unpleasant
people
there.
Well, there were some pretty unpleasant scenes that I encountered in America as well, because there were some parts of America that I'm really surprised that I went to, considering that I was very young, and I really didn't have much protection, you know.
Yeah, well, you survived.
Well, I did, yeah.
You're not worth killing. You're not worth killing.
Well, I mean, you say that, yeah. But I mean, they don't care about whether you're worth killing. Well, they just kill
blow you.
You
away well, and do 30 years in San Quentin.
Well,
eh?
Because some of them have already got preparations for doing 30 years in San Quentin.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not about me. It's about the cheapness of life.
Some of them are off their heads
on crack
and all that. Do you ever see that film Training Day?
No.
It was great. It was with...
Training Day?
Yeah, Training Day. Yeah, it was about
about
a bloke who was taken out. You know, he was in the worst... the suburbs of LA.
Yeah.
And the chief guy who's, you know, very streetwise and all that, takes out the rookie and all that. But then the rookie works out halfway through the day, the chief cop is actually on the take.
He's on the take massively.
Massively from all the drug barons and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And the rookie tries to rebel and, you know, put it right and do gooder.
Yeah, yeah.
What a load of bollocks, you know. Right.
Are you sure that's not called something else? Because it sounds like another film I've seen with Richard Gere in it.
No.
But it's called Internal Affairs.
No, this is called Training Day.
All right.
If I was the rookie, I'd have just taken half of what the boss was
taking. Well, you would have done because you're essentially corrupt.
And then retired 2 years later. Anyway, the reason I mention this is in one of my historical journals, I found out that if you are ever to be executed, the thing to do to make your last moments better or even escape is to have a laugh and a shout with your executioner. So,
how close to the executioner are we talking here?
You're
talking about as you're being walked up to the gallows?
Yeah, that's right, on the scaffold, basically. Or in front of...
Or towards the chair.
Yes. Or getting
nailed down to the gurney.
No, because that's legal execution. This is where, you know, you're down in El Salvador, suddenly been arrested, you're tied to a tree, and they say, right, you've got one last wish, so I'll have a cigarette, please, or something like that, you know. And they say, and then they, like the firing squad, shoot you, you know what I mean? So the reason I mention this is because Sir Thomas More...
Yes.
And you know who Sir Thomas More was?
Yeah, of course, he was executed, wasn't he?
He was Henry VIII's Chancellor. Yeah.
Well, and, up to a point.
Well, they say Chancellor, but it doesn't mean he looked after the money. And then he was his chief aide.
Yes.
And he was supposed to ring up the Pope. Mm. Well, he couldn't ring up the Pope, obviously. Didn't have phones, Jose.
Hello?
He's like,
why is this fucking phone working? Nobody's invented it yet.
He was supposed to send a message to the Pope saying, hi, Pope, we have decided in this
Feck
country... we have decided in this country...
Yeah, to have our own church.
No. We've decided in this country that part of the Catholic faith in future will be that you can get rid of your current wife to get a new one.
That's right.
And
the Pope said you can't do that.
Exactly. The Pope sent a message back saying no. So Henry VIII was absolutely incensed.
Yeah, he wasn't happy.
And he accused Sir Thomas More of being a complete tosser.
Right.
You know, you can't do anything right when I ask you to do things, you know. So then he decided...
You would have been a good Henry VIII, wouldn't you?
Pretty good Henry VIII. Yeah, you're absolutely right, yeah. I'm Henry VIII, I am, I am, I'm
the fourth
Henry
song you've sung.
Yeah.
I think that's way too many.
So what happens is Henry VIII then did two things. First one was he said, right, bollocks to the Pope, right, which is not something you should say on it.
It's not
really something
that many people said in those days.
In fact, smite me, and I want to apologise for actually saying those words, you know.
Because I tell you what, I mean, in those days, the Pope and the whole kind of Vatican situation was one of the most powerful forces in the entire world.
Oh, without doubt.
You didn't go up against them without being very sure that you were going to win.
Remember, the bishops in this country under Henry VIII were the most powerful lobby.
Yeah.
You know, they were only churchmen. Really, but they owned all the estates, they owned all the buildings, they owned the castles, they were massively powerful.
Yeah.
They were warmongers, really, you know, for territory
and all
that. You're
about to tell me this is how the Reformation started, aren't you?
Is the Reformation, Martin Luther and all that, you know? Yeah.
Well, no, this is when they went and seized all the Catholic churches.
Well, that's right.
And seized all of the monks and the monasteries.
Oh, he burned them all down.
And burned them all down
and
or just converted them.
Anyway, listen, let me tell you this.
So,
Thomas More, who according to Henry had not done the job properly, this is before Henry started waging war on the Pope.
Right.
He said, you know, you're no good to me, I'm getting rid of you. So he actually, what they did was, they had this show trial, and he was done for,
sedition,
that's
sedition.
Right, the crime of...
It's like treason, but not quite so bad.
No, I think it was treason they did him for.
Well,
treason.
They might have done him for treason as well.
Because he didn't do the king's bidding.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, he's quite a good guy, old Thomas More, quite philosophical about it. This is in 1535.
Uh-huh.
So as he walks up on the gallows, he says to the bloke wearing the... black hood, wielding an axe.
Otherwise known as the executioner.
That's right, yeah.
What are you doing here?
He says, I am the king's good servant, but God's first.
Yeah.
So what he's saying is, I don't give a monkeys about you, you know, execute me, yeah. because I've been the king's servant, yeah. he didn't want me, I'll now be God's servant.
Okay.
So I had a great belief that God was there, okay?
Yeah. So it doesn't really cheery, though, is
it? Now, the problem was, that's a common misquotation.
Is it?
In fact, what he said was, yeah. I am the king's good servant
yeah.
and God's first.
God's first?
Yes, not but God's first, okay. and God's first.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that he's saying that I am God's first servant right. as well, I go to well, heaven.
Isn't that what it says either way?
No, but God's first yeah. meant God in front of Henry,
right.
but and God's first right. mean I will be the first to get to God
uh-huh.
ahead of Henry.
So I see.
Yeah,
right.
okay. So anyway, what
I'm
happens
sure
is...
I'm buying that, but anyway.
What happens on. Is... the executioner mm. then bursts into tears because they didn't actually like chopping people's heads off, right? No, it's absolutely
well,
true.
Well, he found the only depressed executioner
yeah,
in the world.
Yeah. No, he did. And there's well, this wooden want to do block this there, you know, with all the blood off.
What
from
a rubbish. No, Where are you getting this rubbish from?
From my historical journal.
Yeah.
So
Executioner's
Weekly. What happens is... Henry then... sorry, not Henry, Thomas. Thomas, who's about to be executed.
Yeah.
Then... works out a way. He thinks I can get out of this
right.
by reducing the executioner
yeah.
to jelly, right. you know, and not able to lift his axe.
Yeah,
seriously. Okay. So what he did was then he decided to crack another joke. Okay,
right.
So
well, the first one is not really a joke. He's got the guy bursting into tears.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
he's not laughing at him.
No, but he then decides to tell him a joke to try and make him feel better,
oh,
you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Thomas More then drops to his knees
right.
and repeats a load of psalms and says to the executioner, just a minute, please, just a minute, okay? And the executioner then says, say a psalm for me. Right. Say a psalm, not
say
a psalm.
Say a little psalm
say,
for
yeah,
me.
Say a psalm for me.
The moment I wake up.
Yeah, say a little psalm for the moment I wake up. Right. I put on my makeup.
What is
that
fucking load of old bollocks
anyway,
this is?
No, hang on.
Cobblers.
So then the executioner is so yeah. distraught, he says to the man he's about to execute,
yeah.
can you say a psalm for me?
Yeah.
Because I want forgiveness.
Okay.
And then, More then tells his best joke, yeah. right? He says, you are forgiven, my son.
Yeah.
He said, and I'll even forgive you for missing.
Yeah.
And the executioner, who's now completely befuddled, yeah, you know, yeah. says, what do you mean? He says, well, haven't you noticed?
He's not too bright, the executioner.
No, he's not too bright. And he can't see his face. He's got his mask on.
Yeah,
with
and
eyes
he's weeping now as well.
He's weeping.
So he's out of a mess.
No, he's weeping, honestly. Yeah. So,
isn't there somebody in the back going, get up with it?
well, all the crowd are saying that.
Yeah.
Literally, there's
baying
thousands.
For blood, literally.
Yeah, they go on with it, chop his head
off with
you know,
head.
Bastard.
Yeah.
You know, he's against the king and all that. So what happens then is...
We want less, not more.
Yeah, so what happens then is... More says, have I told you already that he's got a short neck?
No.
Never
mentioned
so,
that.
So More,
what do you mean he's got a short neck?
He's got a short neck.
How short?
Well, so short that remember that cricketer years ago who had a very short neck.
No,
you know when sometimes these bodybuilders get into building, the shoulders seem to go to their chin.
Yeah, but their shoulders are kind of triangular. Though,
yeah, that's what I mean. But you got no neck.
But I mean, I've seen people with no neck before.
So yeah. So anyway, old Thomas More's wearing this ruff, and a ruff is a thing like around your neck.
Yes,
it's a gentleman's
piece of
clothing.
Well, it was like an Elizabethan sort of
adornment.
That's
right. Yeah, yeah. So he
like
says. He says to the executioner, don't worry about it, and I'd let you know, I've got a very short neck.
Right.
So the executioner then has another outburst of grief, you know, and starts wailing.
He's sensitive, this executioner, isn't he?
He's very sensitive.
Yeah.
Because he says, you know, I want to give you a clean chop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And if I don't know where your neck is, because you've got...
Well, why does it take the ruff off?
Exactly, yeah. You got his clothes on. I don't want to put the axe in the middle of your back.
No.
You know, I'd rather...
No, that wouldn't be good.
Do you know,
although
sometimes...
Although it'd probably work, no, to be fair. It'd probably kill him.
No, quite honestly, sometimes when people are executed by having their head chopped off, it took up to 16 strokes.
Really?
I mean, you know, you think of this thing when somebody's executing, wield the axe, bang, one chop. I mean, think of the guillotine.
Yeah.
The guillotine.
Well,
that
worked very cleanly.
Yeah,
it
did. That just chopped your head off.
That's why a lot of people prefer the sword. Because I think a sword is a lot cleaner than an axe.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, so what happens is
send the time, by the way.
Don't worry about the time. I just want to tell you this.
Yeah.
Thomas More then sees his opportunity.
Uh-huh.
He gets up off his knees.
Yeah.
And he says to the executioner, Pick up thy spirits, man, and be not afraid to do thine office.
Right.
He then kisses him.
Christ.
He kisses the executioner.
Well, how can he kiss him? He's wearing a hood.
I don't know. I don't know where he kissed him.
This is getting a bit dark now.
Yeah.
What's he going to do next?
That's right. He says, my neck will not impede your blade.
Yeah.
But then he says, but it is very short. And he says, take heed, therefore, thou strike not awry for having thine honesty. And then, and then he says, I am God's servant. Yeah. And then he says to the executioner, I pray you, Mr. Lieutenant, see me safe up, and for my coming down, I can shaft myself. What's your problem? Yeah, those are his exact words.
She can shaft himself. Yeah. That's quite a good trick.
Yeah.
He should be in one of those places in fucking Amsterdam if he can do that.
Yeah, I can shaft myself, okay? And then what happened was, he got
killed in the end, didn't he?
Well,
we're not cut to the chase.
No, what happened was, I mean, you know, Thomas Wall had been a great friend of Henry VIII, so nobody was actually sure whether he was supposed to be executed.
Right.
They didn't know whether it was one of these.
Because sometimes the king had a sort of temper tantrum, right?
Well, remember the guy who got done in the cathedral?
Thomas of Becket.
Yeah, that's right. You know, this.
I have not been angry until this moment. Will someone not rid me of
this pestilent priest and all that kind of stuff? So they weren't really sure they should, you know, actually chop his head off. Anyway. Yeah. Thomas More, friend and counsellor to Henry VIII for many years, right? He then got down again.
Right.
And the man with the axe then had to sort of pull himself together.
Yeah.
But he did say before he did it, I feel very emotional about this.
Really?
Which I suppose is some comfort to Thomas More.
Yeah.
But anyway, the executioner pulled himself together, waved his axe at the people, who did, as you quite rightly said, get on with it.
Yeah.
And amazingly...
Yeah.
Executed and took off Tom's War's head with one swift blow.
There you go.
How about that?
So, basically, that entire section of the podcast about how it's a good idea to befriend your executioner is a load of bollocks.
Well, it
didn't work anyway.
It didn't work again, but he had a happy few moments.
That's possibly one of the most ridiculous stories I've ever heard.
Why?
Because, one, it doesn't work,
right? It's historical.
So it's historical, interesting from that perspective. But secondly, you know, a man who spends an awful lot of time trying to convince his executioner not to execute him, or by giving him a sort of double jeopardy kind of reverse ferret conversation, trying to make out that, you know, actually you really don't want to, you do want to do this, in the hopes that he won't do it, and then he does it anyway.
Yeah, does anyway,
so what's the difference?
Well, look, all I'm trying to say is I'm trying to bring some historical perspective to it. Now, talking about historical...
Well, let's hope we never face the executioner's axe.
Yes, let's hope that indeed.
Yeah.
Now, bring us back right back to modern times.
Yeah.
I have come across an insidious plan.
Have you?
By the government.
Really?
To try and get rid of traffic jams and potholes.
Right. Well, I'm all in favour of getting rid of both of those things.
So am I.
Yeah.
Guess what they're going to do?
I don't know.
In future.
Ban cars.
No. Now, I quite like this plan, but it's going to be protested by the disabled and the blind.
Okay.
Because what they're going to do is, right, instead of digging up roads to put pipes and cables and all that in, in future, they're going to dig up pavements.
Yes. Well, they already do that anyway, don't they?
Yeah, but they don't...
Sometimes. It's only like gas mains and things.
Yeah. But they're going to put them on the pavements as well.
Yeah, but you know what the problem here is? I can already see the problem here.
Yeah.
Because when you dig up a pavement, and you can see that all over the country, people will be listening to this podcast going, oh, yeah, there's a place just down the road that they do that.
Yes, that's right.
When they what do they do when they dig up the pavement?
When they do up the pavement, they make a mess and they steer pedestrians onto the road.
Onto the road, exactly. Yeah. So, in fact, what they do when they dig up the pavement is they also reduce the road space because they make the pedestrians walk on it.
Well, that can happen. That can happen.
It does happen.
Now, what I'm going to say to you is that the problem with this is, one of the reasons this is, did you know that most potholes occur on roads that have just been dug up? Because they're not put down again properly,
that may well be the case. Yeah. I know that an awful lot of damage is done by the elements, by rain, by snow, that kind of
thing. I think you're right.
Not just because of the traffic volume,
but because
of the water and where it sits.
Yeah, some potholes have been there for a year.
Yeah.
Right? Some potholes are so deep you can actually jump into them and you would drown if you were bladderated.
Really?
Yeah, that's how big potholes get. The pothole situation in this country is an absolute disgrace.
It is.
Where do you think we are in the World League of Good Roads?
I'd have to ask you, how is that measured and does it include the whole world?
It includes the whole world.
Yeah.
and it's measured on the acceptability and proficiency of your roads in this country. Okay. Now, I would say, as we've got the fifth biggest economy in the world, possibly the fourth, possibly the sixth, then we should be fifth or sixth.
No.
Do you know where we are?
I would say probably somewhere in the top 100, but not in the top 50.
27th.
Oh,
we're
really?
27th in roads. Now, that is an absolute disgrace.
Yeah.
I've been to countries all over this world.
Mm.
I've been to countries like Chile.
Yeah.
Chile is higher up the league table than we are for good roads.
Well, maybe they haven't got better roads. They haven't got as many.
It's a bloody disgrace.
Well, maybe they haven't got as many cars.
Lots of Chile is in desert. It's in the Atacama Desert where I've been, right?
Yeah.
There's no good roads in the Atacama
Desert,
mate. Well,
I'll tell you what, if you go to Spain, for example, right? They've got fantastic roads in Spain. Do
you
know why?
By the European Union.
Built by the European Union. Same in Ireland. They've got fantastic roads in Ireland. They've got brilliant roads in Germany. Brilliant roads in France.
In Ireland, they've got roads which say built for you by the European Union. And guess what? They don't go anywhere.
No.
The European Union had just gone in and said, you know, why don't we kowtow to the Irish? Why don't we make them a great friend of the European Union?
Uh-huh.
They're a relatively small country.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, hundreds of billions of quid given to us by rich countries like Britain.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we build a load of roads in Ireland.
Well, they
the problem
to,
was
though.
They don't need all those roads.
Well,
and
they
now
do.
they're roads to nowhere.
Well, the thing is,
I'm on the road to nowhere.
That's number seven song you've sung in this session. Now, the thing is about the roads, though, in Spain, for example, the roads are good, and as the fact that the roads are good and getting better, more and more people decide to drive.
Yeah.
Right? Therefore, actually, they start to create their own demand, if you like, because people go, oh, that's quite a nice road.
Oh, it's a damn disgrace.
Well, it's not. Same in France. I mean, you come off the ferry in France, right, in Calais. I used to go over there quite a lot before we had a dog.
Okay.
And we go on a booze cruise, right, and we go to the nearest little hypermarket.
A booze cruise?
Well, it wasn't just booze.
But what you're all about, is it?
We take the kids for the day.
Bloody disgrace.
It was a nice trip on the boat. Cost about 35 quid, right?
Yeah.
You get off the other end, we'd go to this really nice hypermarket called Carrefour, just outside of Calais.
Yeah.
We'd buy about a case of wine, buy a load of pate, some lovely cheese. And then we'd have a bit of lunch. We'd come back on the ferry, and we'd be back home by about 7 o'clock at night.
Sounds like a wasted day.
It was a beautiful day out. You got to go across the channel.
Yeah.
Right,
and what's this got to do with the roads I'm talking about?
Well, because when you would come off at the ferry port in Calais, the state of the roads was magnificent, right? The roads in Calais, notwithstanding whatever you've heard about the immigration problem and all that, they're very smooth, they have no potholes, the signs are very clear, right? When you come off the roads in Dover, have you any idea how bad they are? They're absolutely disgraceful.
Well, the roads around Epsom,
absolutely hopeless.
The Derby's going to happen soon. It happens in June in this country.
Yeah.
And the roads around
Epsom.
Go? Yeah, I'll probably will go.
Will
you? Yeah, I will.
Are you getting a box?
I will get into somebody's tent.
Somebody's tent?
Yeah, that's
is that
right,
a euphemism?
Yeah. No, you fool.
I've seen you being carried out of somebody's tent. I've seen you being carried out of the Duracell tent.
Rubbish.
I have.
Rubbish.
First Derby I ever went to, you were being carried out of the Duracell tent.
What
you didn't even know
bollocks.
I was there.
What
you didn't even know I was there.
Well, what are you doing there? Spying on me?
No, I was covering it for the Daily Express.
Oh, were you?
It was in the days when I first came back from America.
Yeah.
And I don't know who you were working for, but you must have been working for maybe one of the other papers. I'm not sure.
Well, I would still have been with the Express unless I was working in America.
No. You left the Express before I came back.
Oh, well, could have been another newspaper.
It would have been another newspaper.
What do you mean you saw me carried out of the Duracell tent?
You were literally being carried out on a stretcher.
Rubbish. I've never been carried out on a stretcher.
Honest truth.
You're talking absolute bollocks. It's a lie.
God's honest truth.
Take that lie back.
No,
it's a lie.
Think about it. Let me tell you how I know this, right?
Yeah.
I was driving into work, and you know what it was like in those days.
Yes.
The news desk would ring you up as you were coming into work. And I was coming into work, and it was Derby Day, because it was in the days when it was still a Wednesday.
Right,
and I got a call from the news desk, and they said, what are you doing today?
Do you have a phone in your car?
I had a mobile phone.
Oh, I see, because in those days, we had these, like, phones the size of a brick fitted into your car.
No, it didn't fit into the car.
Oh, yeah,
it was just the phone I could use in the car.
Right,
in those days, there was no such thing as hands-free.
No, that's right,
you just answered the phone.
And there was not a law against using a
phone
when
no
you were driving.
There was no law against it, and also there was so much traffic that I was just sitting. I used to read the paper on the way in.
That's right.
I used to have the paper on the steering wheel.
Yeah, because you're so bone idle to read it the night before.
Well, I didn't get it the night before because I was in bed, you plonker.
Yeah, go on.
The point is I would come down Blackfriars Road and I would sit in traffic that was doing about 2 miles an hour and I'd be reading all the papers on the steering wheel, which was fine. So anyway, they called up and they said, what are you doing today?
I said, nothing
really. Mm. I haven't got any plans. And they said, okay, how do you fancy going to the Derby?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So they said, well, just carry on going to Epsom.
Right.
Got down there. I found out Robert Jobson, our good friend, was doing it for the paper for the Royals coverage,
the Standard.
So I said, no, he was working for the Express.
Oh, okay,
He was the Royal correspondent. Right,
yeah, okay, yeah.
So I said to him, are you just covering all this? And he went,
yeah.
I said, great. I said, in that case, I'll just go on the piss.
Yes.
So I never filed a piece of copy at all.
Why not?
Because I wasn't required to.
It was your job. Your job to find a story.
No.
Not just say, oh, Rob Jobs is here. Christ almighty.
Rob Jobson was covering it, right?
Well, the reason I was a great reporter is I was sent to places where there weren't stories. Really? And I found the stories.
Yeah, well, I found
the stories.
Well, I found you being carried out of the Duracell
rubbish.
Tent.
Absolutely.
And that, just as I got there, right? Yeah. And this was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Rubbish.
I think you'd been with Brazil or somebody. I don't know. Yeah. But all I can tell you is, you remember the Duracell tent? It used to be the biggest, freebiest tent in the whole race course, right?
That's why they used to invite me.
And that's why they used to invite you. And you were literally.
It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
You were comatose.
Doubt if Mr. Brazil was involved.
You were comatose.
Rubbish.
You were.
Utter nonsense.
Anyway, it was a great day out.
And you couldn't even find a story.
I didn't look for one.
What do you mean you didn't look for one? That's what you go there
no,
for.
No, I just had enjoyed the day.
When I was told to cover the royal wedding of Charles and Diana, I was a reporter on the Daily Express in Manchester, and I was told to come down and, swell the ranks of Daily Express reporters on the streets.
Right.
I said, oh, okay. So
yeah,
I got
but
down
so
there.
You just got a team byline for a load of old crap.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
No, I'm about to tell you the story. Just shut your fat goth, right? And I'm going
to
tell
you.
You
seem to be naturally exacerbated.
Yeah, so I get there, right? I get there and...
Oh, what are you going to tell me? You broke the fucking exclusive they were getting married?
No.
Oh, no,
it's better than that.
Yeah, right.
So you're absolutely right. Most of them were just team members just, filing around. I actually said, I'm going to find a story.
Really?
So I found this bloke from Basildon in Essex, who'd driven there at 4:30 in the morning with 350 cardboard periscopes.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
350 cardboard periscopes.
What a great story that is.
And he folded them all together.
What page did you put that on? 95.
I'm about to tell you.
Yeah.
Put the mirrors in them.
Yeah.
And then people at the back of the crowd with their periscopes could see the royal couple going past in the, in the fantastic...
Well, they could see it in a tiny little fucking
gilded
mirror.
Gilded coach, right?
They could see it in a tiny little mirror.
Anyway, I realised...
They were in an open coach, weren't they? I don't think it was a gilded coach.
No.
Pretty sure they were in an open coach.
Well, I think they had two different journeys.
Are you sure you were there?
They had more than one journey.
No.
I was there.
Had one journey from St. Paul's
back to the
palace.
Ah, yeah, but then
Because they arrived at St. Paul's separately, you plank.
But let me tell you this.
Yeah.
Then from the palace to, believe it or not, Waterloo Station to get the train down to Lord Mountbatten's place where they started their leg-overism, if you see what I mean.
I don't think
that
was the same day, though.
It was.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Because they all came out on the balcony. It was remember.
And then they went to Waterloo.
Because you remember that great
later.
Headline, and then he kissed her.
That's right, yeah.
That was the headline.
But they went down there later.
I don't think you remember it properly.
I remember it properly. Anyway, so...
Anyway, who cares about some fucking bloke with some periscopes on the day of the royal wedding?
About to tell you.
It's page 94. If I'd been night editor, I'd have gone, put Parry on page 94.
No, not at all.
Give him a little picture byline.
Not at all.
Keep him happy.
So I found the guy who brought these periscopes in, because all the pictures next day just showed... all these periscopes. And I thought, I'm going to be smarter than the average bear and find out where those periscopes came from.
So this was the following day?
This was the day after the royal wedding.
Yeah, so it wasn't on the day of the wedding then?
On the day of the wedding, the paper's not published.
No,
it's published the following day.
No, I know that, but you're saying it wasn't until you saw the pictures of the periscopes
that you thought, I'll go and find
the guy.
No, I was in the crowd and I saw all the periscopes,
right?
And, of course, an Evening Standard came out and I saw the picture in the Evening Standard.
Right.
I thought,
so you
I'm going to find the
there.
Guy.
Right, so then you went to find him.
Exactly,
So somebody else gave you the idea.
Nobody gave me the idea. I gave myself the idea. You stole
it from the Standard.
Right, no.
Now it's making sense.
Well, nobody else did the story. So I found the bloke and he said, yeah, mate. He said, my name's Terry. I'm from Basildon. I said, oh, where'd you get the idea?
Was it Terry Manners, was it?
No, it wasn't Terry Manners. No. The madman. The mad right winger. No, it wasn't him. No. He's still rambling nonsense
on Twitter
all the time. Yeah.
God bless him.
So what I did was, I found a guy, he made £1,000 in one day. That was a lot of money in those days.
Yeah.
That was like five or six or seven
There's
or eight thousand pounds. Yeah, absolutely. And the following day, I got a telegram, from the news editor saying...
A telegram?
Mike. Yeah, thank you very much.
Why didn't he just ring you up?
I don't know. Well, I didn't have a mobile phone in those days.
You weren't important enough to have one.
Well, there weren't mobile phones in those days. There were no mobile phones in 1980 when this happened.
Yeah, 81.
So, 81, that's right, yeah. So he said, a sparklingly different story which lit up the coverage.
What
thank
page?
You very much indeed. It was on about page 7.
Rubbish.
Yes, it was.
Rubbish.
It was. And
I want to see the cutting.
And all that, eh?
I want to see the cutting.
You won't see nothing.
Yeah, I won't see nothing. That's the great journalist it is, Mike Parry. We are the two Mikes.
Thomas More then sees his opportunity.
Uh-huh.
He gets up off his knees
and
he says to the executioner, pick up thy spirits, man, and be not afraid to do thine office.
Right.
He then kisses him.
Christ.
He kisses the executioner.
Well, how can he kiss him? He's wearing a hood.
I don't know. I don't know where he kissed
this
him.
This is getting a bit dark now.
Yeah.
What's he going to do next?
That's right. Hey? He says, my neck will not impede your blade.
Yeah.
But then he says, but it is very short. And he says, take heed, therefore, thou strike not awry, for having thine honesty. And then, and then he says, I am God's servant. Yeah. And then he says to the executioner, I pray you, Mr. Lieutenant, see me safe up, and for my coming down, I can shaft myself.
What's your problem?
Yeah, those are his exact words.
He can shaft himself. Yeah. That's quite a good trick.
Yeah.
He should be in one of those places in fucking Amsterdam that can do that.
Yeah, I can shaft myself, okay? And the following day, yeah, I got a telegram, right,
right,
from the news editor saying...
A telegram? Mike.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Why didn't he just ring you up?
I don't know. Well, I didn't have a mobile phone in those days. Yeah.
You weren't important enough to have one.
Well, there weren't mobile phones in those days. There were no mobile phones in 1980 when this happened.
Yeah, 81.
So, 81, that's right, yeah. Right, bollocks to the Pope, right.